Well, it's been a solid month since we've had an episode. My apologies, but I was busy getting married in Detroit and having a honeymoon and then, you know, tying all these things back together and, you know, getting everything straightened out. So, now we're back in podcast land. This episode, and again, apologies to Ben Acker. We recorded this quite a while back. I don't even know how far back it goes. Either way, it was a while. So my apologies to Ben Acker, but it's a very good episode. He wanted to talk about an album that I had frankly never heard of, and you know, that happens. It's Bruce McCullough's Shame Based Man. Now, he does have two albums, but this one is, like I said, this one's called Shame Based Man, and it's so strange, but I love it. It's very Bruce McCullough. If you like his work, you'll enjoy this. You know, it's not all of it's not all These Are the Days I Know, which is, you know, one of the sort of the things that one might associate with Bruce McCullough. It's very much it's not as poppy, as it were. It's not all music either. I don't want to give that impression, but it's not necessarily the poppiest comedy. It's mostly monologues, usually the music in the background. Or it's him doing call-in bits, playing both parts. And in some ways, it's kind of intentionally rough around the edges. It feels like an art house comedy album, but in a very good way. You know, if I can handle it, then you know it's not too pretentious. I really can't handle pretentious comedy. It's quite good, and it's Bruce McCullough who's great and has fun with the idea of pretension, while at the same time not really being pretentious. So, yeah, that's a long way of saying it's a great album. Ben Acker was very gracious to come over and has been gracious in waiting over 2 months to for this to come out. Obviously, listen to the Thrilling Adventure Hour podcast. Go see it live here at Largo at the Coronet. It's a wonderful show. I have seen it live. It's one of the best things you can see live in L.A. And please enjoy the episode, and thanks for sticking around. Hey everybody, thank you for joining this week words. Okay, let's try that again. Hey everybody, thank you for joining me this week. I have Ben Acker with me. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Home.
You wanted to talk about Shame Based Man by Bruce McCullough. And
exclusively. So let's please.
Why did you pick it though? I had never heard of it. And I feel ashamed because I'm a big Kids in the Hall guy.
Well, that's the thing with it is that I felt like it was, you know, it's a strong album. It's very funny. It's good.
Yeah.
But I felt like it was a good gateway to talking about the Kids in the Hall, which were major. Like, they were the funniest funny when I was in high school and
right.
Discovering funny.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the first time it was, hey, who should we be when we grow up?
Right, you know? Yeah. That's awesome.
So, yes, it's a good, solid album. I re-listened to it because I was coming here and talking about it. And it was interesting, and maybe you have this, your guests have this experience, where they haven't listened to something in a super long time, and then they push play, and it's like, oh, they know every word.
Right, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I had that last week. Somebody specifically mentioned that. Especially with music, usually.
Who?
D.C. Pearson.
Oh.
Yeah, he mentioned having that experience.
What
was
his?
He picked a Bare Naked Ladies album, actually.
Gordon. I didn't know you could do that.
If you wanted to, you could. Brian Stack picked a punk album that was in no way comedy.
Brian Stack is inappropriate at best. I recommend you suppress that episode of the podcast. He's just doing his in-your-face brand of comedy.
Yes, that's exactly right.
You know, it'll be funny and punk rock at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Picking a punk rock album to be my comedy thing. Oh, Brian Stack. If I see him, I'm going to sock him. How many beefs start on this show? How many beefs? Starting the show?
Yeah, good question. This might be the first. That might be the first.
All right.
I'm happy, though. That's
cool. I mean, I feel like he should get the credit for being such a jerk.
I won't tell him you said that. I'll let you tell him.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he'll listen to this.
Sure, of course.
And
he
feel
must listen to every
episode. The appropriate amount of, you know, self-blame.
Mm-hmm. That's understandable.
Stack. Oh. So, get off your high horse, Brian Stack. Fight me.
I would pay to see that.
I would pay to be in it.
Okay, good. Well, maybe we'll arrange that.
Yeah, we've got two buyers right
here. Right? When did you first find this album though? I mean, it was, I assume it was the show first, but
it was the show first, and I don't know. It was a before the internet times where I couldn't even justify knowing anything.
Right.
It came out, and I knew about it, and I got it. I feel like I got a single before.
Okay.
And I don't know how I found that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just always, as soon as it existed, it was something that I needed.
Yeah.
And got. And, man, I really like it.
Yeah.
And in, you know, in listening to it this week. It doesn't crack me up.
No.
But it feels right. Like, it's that kind of like, it feels like it's always existed and it always will and it always should.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's really strongly put together, obviously. And it's obviously of his.
You know what it is? It's his point of view, and that's what it is.
Yeah, which is,
and that's strong and interesting and what I like in comedy.
Right. I mean, as opposed to, I guess, the all the different guys putting together. He stands out, though, on that show. I mean, when his voice comes through, you know, it's one of those things that it put me off at first when I was younger. I'm like, what is he doing? I'm like, is he trying to play a part of an avant-garde comedian or like an avant-garde artist type? But no, he's clearly that's the guy he is, but he's also got, like you said, a very strong point of view.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite track off of this album?
You know, like, it could be that they put the Daves I Know on a thing, and that was, you know, the Kids in the Holliest thing in the world at
right,
the time.
Right,
there's a way, what is the, there's a thing, there's a track where he's complaining on the bus.
Yes.
Or that people shouldn't be allowed to mutter bullshit.
Yes.
That ends just so sublimely,
because
something happened to me. That's it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
I don't know, but yeah, probably the Daves I Know, just because that was also early in my enjoyment of Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
Was
this an album that you shared with anybody, or did you keep it to yourself?
Oh, there was in high school. My my buddies Chris and Dan and I were we would watch the Kids in the Hall like it was our jobs.
Yeah.
And like in drama class, we did their sketches as assignments.
Awesome.
And so I'm sure it was a collaborative listen with those guys at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you discover the show with them too, or was it something you knew on your own and then you found out you all loved it?
It's a sign of my goddamned age where both of those sound completely plausible.
All right.
It would have been the kind of thing that if one of us discovered it before the others, it was a conversation the next day, and then it became the thing that we would do.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know where it came from, but it was important that it was there.
Is it easy to nail down what drew you to it, other than it just being insanely different?
You mean at the time?
Yeah.
Like what? It was funnier. It was the funniest thing. It was, I think it was the first time I was aware of writers and performers and doing the same, like, that guy wrote that piece for himself. And it was at a time where we were starting to write things and performing things, and that they could do both was inspiring. And
sure.
I don't know.
Is
that okay? Should I leave?
Yeah, you should probably leave.
I really blew it. Brian Stack, you win this round.
When did you then... You don't know when you found out about this album necessarily. You already answered that.
In as much as I can trust my memory,
which
is a jerk and a liar, I knew about the single, and then I knew about the album. Like, it was... There might have been a time, it would have been early college, and that was a time when I was a regular, you know, go to the record store when things come out and see what happens.
Yeah.
The awareness that Tuesday is a release day for music and movies, and Wednesday is a release day for comics.
Right.
You know,
like,
you check in.
Sure. Did you, ever forget what you were going to say next?
Because I don't know that I would be able to respect myself if I did that. Or go on. Should I ask a question?
You should probably ask me a question.
Who's your favorite guest you've ever had?
Brian Stack.
Oh.
So I have to assume then that a lot of Kids in the Hall must have crept into your early writing then.
Oh yeah, no, there's still there's probably still moments where I am not aware where it came from. Like there's you go back and you see something that you haven't seen in a while and you go, oh, that's where I got that.
Yeah.
That, just that turn of phrase, that kind of not to be on a tangent, but I watched the Hudsucker Proxy yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, all right. That's where we get we got a bunch of stuff from the Hudsucker Proxy. Mm-hmm. I wish that was an album. We could talk about it.
We could do it sometime. Talk about the soundtrack, and then we'll talk about the movie. That's how I justify it.
All right.
To talk about Phil Hartman, we used a Pogo album because he designed the cover. That's
a Pogo album.
A Pogo album. Pogo the band.
Oh. Yes. All right. Yeah. Not Walt Kelly's Pogo.
No, not Pogo. Sorry. All no, right. We should talk about Pogo sometime.
Right? And his album is probably swinging.
Yeah. There is one. It's very expensive and hard to find. It's very hard to find, though.
Maybe you can... The internet will give it to you.
The internet will probably give it right up to me. Do you... So, what was the first comedy album you listened to, then? Were you a comedy album kid?
I was a comedy album kid. I feel like I mean, we talked about this in emails. Mm-hmm. I mean, does Sesame Street count?
Right.
You
definitely
know?
Does.
Were you setting me up for that?
No.
All right.
No, not
okay.
at all. I forgot. It's
Cause,
okay.
No, because, like, I remember in junior high school getting... The dirty stuff, like George Carlin mm-hmm. when I was 13, and Eddie Murphy and Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
And yeah, really, really using headphones for that stuff because
mm-hmm.
it was there's dirty words on there. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but yeah, no, I really like George Carlin. Of those, like
yeah.
that one was the one that.
Did you sit? Was it mostly?
Oh, and Emo Phillips.
Oh, of course.
Holy crap, Emo yeah. Phillips.
Which one did you
eat? E equals MO
sure.
squared.
It's great.
Who
album.
Talked about that with you?
Jonah Ray.
That son of a bitch.
It's a good album.
He's a great guy.
And it was a good episode. He's very nice. Guy. Just got He's married. Congratulations, Jonah
Congratulations
Ray.
Congratulations to both of them.
Yeah. Well, mostly Jonah.
That's fair. That's what you say.
So you were a comedy album kid, but do you...
And
do you
Weird know, Al. Weird Al, fifth
of,
grade.
Of course.
Dare to Be Stupid. Your Mike Furman took that one. I
yeah,
know that.
I know.
Was, that was my... I don't know if there's a podcast where we talk about the first episode of this podcast we listened to. If I'll do that on the way out.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be good.
But that was my first of this. And yeah, Furman was scholarly in
right?
his... Oh.
It was insane.
I want to fight him for different reasons. I want to fight him because I want to be him, not because I, you know...
Yeah,
because I'm
he's
in it with
so
him, like
charming.
I am with Stack. He's a nice guy. He's
the nicest guy. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Did you?
It's a shame he's not taller.
I know, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
See, you're throwing me off. This is good. So we were talking about your first comedy albums
yeah.
that you listened to.
Yeah, Sesame Street.
But
early
right,
on.
So Sesame
yeah,
Street. Yeah,
yeah. I feel like there is, like, it's a gateway to comedy. Like the old Sesame Street stuff was the kind of beautiful, dumb, smart combination thing
yeah.
that is the best. I mean, the common thread in thinking about it is strong character, like
sure.
strong point of view for them too. Like, what's a purer perspective on the world than me want cookies?
Hey man, listen up. I'm gonna let you in on a little secret. You know that new Depeche Mode album? It sucks. You know what? That new Cure album? It sucks. That new Happy Mondays album? I don't know if there is one, but if there is, it sucks. I can say this, because I know, because I'm a Doors fan. And you know, if you want to be a Doors fan, you know what? You might already be one, and you don't even know it. You know? Sort of like being gay. You're walking around, you know, something's up. You just don't know what it is yet. You see, Doors fans aren't made. They're born. I bet right now, in Africa, there's some guy madly beating on a drum. He's one. Or an old lady on a bus, sucking humbugs. She's a rider on the storm, and she don't even know it. I do, because I'm a Doors fan. And if you want to be a Doors fan, don't just go buy a Greatest Hits album either. Greatest Hits albums are for housewives and little girls. If you want to be a Doors fan, you've You gotta do it right. It's very scientific. You gotta buy Waiting for the Sun. It's their third album, but really, it's their first. We call it The Departure Point. Okay, quick quiz. Who's playing bass?
Jim Henson, I guess you could say he had an agenda, but his agenda was just to teach and to bring joy to people, if you want to be simple. Do you, in your own work, do you look at what you write as having an agenda? Because obviously it's very strong, very character strong, and I'm talking specifically about Thrilling Adventure Hour, because that's what I'm mostly familiar with.
That's fair.
What do you have a similar agenda or anything like that? Agenda. A new word.
Yeah, I'm teaching kids the value of numbers and letters.
Okay.
With that, by using both numbers and letters.
Mm-hmm.
No, I am. I don't know that I have that specific of a, you know, certainly not as specific as Jim Henson, but like
sure.
a goal other than, you know, to get to tell the long stories.
Yeah.
Or the, I guess, the not long stories. But,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, no, it's. It's less a teaching agenda. It's mm-hmm. You know, the agenda is why you make it. Like, it's to hone my craft in front of an audience and with sure. the best group of actors in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's pretty accurate.
Probably.
Pretty accurate.
Yeah, it's the artistic freedom of it. Like, mm-hmm. the agenda is purely selfish, or has been, but... In terms of, you know, creative freedom and that kind of thing. And,
yeah.
And, but no, at a certain point, it's been about the audience.
Yeah. And it's got the same respect for the material that you are basing your work off of, in as much as, you know, it's got the same, you know, it's the same goal, and like I said, the same respect for it as, like, the Muppets clearly had a respect for vaudeville, had a mm-hmm. respect for other puppet-type stuff that came before them. You seem to treat your work with the same...
Sure, it's not about, it's never been about, like, oh, this is how silly old radio sounded.
Right,
it's,
right.
It was diligently unresearched. It was like, mm-hmm. It was what we wish it was and what we think it might have been like.
Yeah.
When we started, there's a very smart guy, acquaintance of mine, who said, he got very, very excited. And he's a brilliant person, who said, oh, do you have an encyclopedic knowledge of old-time radio?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, certainly not, and I don't intend to have one ever.
Yeah.
And he was disappointed because he wanted to talk about a specific episode of Jack Benny.
yeah.
And, like, finally, someone I can talk about, like, oh, he had something on his shirt and it was bugging him all night. No, I'm not the guy. I'm not that guy. No, it's, you know, we love Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, we like the things behind the things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to build our own Bill Murray as Indiana Jones.
Was there anything that you got to listen to as a kid that was, I mean, did you listen to any old-time radio at all, though? I mean, you say no encyclopedic knowledge, but what drew you to that?
I don't. I know that, and I feel like I've been on record with this in other podcasts.
Okay.
But not to your listenership.
Right, right.
I assume that we're mutually exclusive, and they're discovering it for the first time here. When I was in college, mm-hmm. I drove from home to school and heard someone doing... amazing reproduction of old-time radio. Like, it sounded spot on, but also, like, really knowing and great.
Mm-hmm.
And not making fun of it and,
sure.
and playing in the tropes and things. And I drove listening the last few miles to my home at school, and got to the driveway, mm-hmm. and continued to listen. And I'm a senior in college at this point with no real direction as to what I'll do after mm-hmm. I graduate, and listening to this going... where do they do this from? Because I want to join up with these guys and do yeah. this thing. It's great. And then the broadcast ended with, that was a rebroadcast of a 1950 episode of The Shadow. And it was like,
holy shit.
Yeah, it was like, I guess I'll go fuck myself. it was, so that's in the back of my head. Like, as Blacker and I were coming up with Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars, mm-hmm. things... One of the things we thought would be fun to do with it would be to record some old-time radio show style things of it. So that yeah. was, you know, part of the DNA of the thing was it could exist on radio.
Right.
And that led us to doing the show and, you know, directly.
Sure, sure. So let's go back to the Muppets for a second. Well, did you what album did you have growing up with the Muppets? Did you have one?
I did. I had several.
Okay.
I feel like it was a greatest hits, just because when I tried to find some of the songs from it, because it was a you know potential topic of conversation on this show,
right?
Turning out to be more than potential. That was the album. There was a Best of Muppets or Best of Sesame Street, mm-hmm. And that was definitely one of the albums that I had. Like the cover was that's an album that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was great. It has songs that kind of hold up. Like, mm-hmm. They were good. They were good, good at everything they did. But, I don't know. The style of music was, I listened to it when I was zero or whatever.
Sure.
It's in me as like, here's the platonic ideal of what music is.
Yeah. You
know, or can be. And working with the composer that we have for our songs, like there's definitely the same kind of 60s, 70s pop sensibility,
yeah.
Plus simple, plus wordplay, plus, you know, punchlines where sure. They go. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask about that as far as like you said, from the time you're little, it becomes your idea of what something can be. Is there anything that you listen to so much that you know? But I mean, obviously, we talked about Kids in the Hall. We'll keep talking about that, but that's so ingrained in you that you've realized has come out either in your writing or in other parts of your life. Anything that you might have sat there and listened to just incessantly?
Oh yeah, no, all of, I mean,
because some people share this stuff, but. I had a thing myself where I would sit and listen to like Carlin and stuff on my own, and that's so it's good to have. So it's interesting to talk to somebody else who sat and listened to a lot of stuff on their own.
Yeah, you're asking if stuff I listen to I can point to and as a causal link for
anything specific.
Well, yeah, no, like for a time we were at the Largo at the Coronet now, the theater that has been our home since we started podcasting, but before that we started at a smaller supper club, and the show was finding what the show was, and so we had hosts that were Acker and Blacker, because we thought we'd get our names out there, and we had Hal Lublin and Annie Savage play Acker and Blacker, which as much as they were Abbott and Costello or whatever, they were Bert and Ernie.
Uh-huh.
It's always been, we always call our show the Muppet Show. Like, the backstage area is as Muppet Show as can be sometimes from the, you know, the celebrity guest that by no means belongs there. They're too good for it. And the crazy behavior of whoever. It's a real, and we say it with glowing pride every time.
Sure.
Like we get to have our own Muppet Show, and
right.
We get to focus on, you know, the bits, the staged bits. But
yeah.
It's all there. It's
sure.
The ingredients are there. I don't know how many Fozzies we have. No disrespect to anyone involved, except Brian Stack when he's involved.
Right, naturally.
Oh man, am I going to regret this Brian Stack thing?
It's fine. From the sounds of it, he's going to regret it because you're going to win, right? I mean, this is what...
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no, that guy has baseball bats falling out of his coat, like, wherever he goes, he knows.
Do you recall the first time you realized comedy was a thing that you wanted to do?
Oh, it... Oh, man, that's...
I hate that question.
No, it's good. It's good because, like, I do a little montage in my brain of, like, oh, it must have been at this point when my friends and I would do comedy in front of a class full of people. And no, it was, like, ripping off a Carlin bit at camp, passing it off as, like, an observation that I made, and the guy that I was talking to going, yeah, I've heard that album. Like, that is a thing. But, like, my grandfather used to say, wise men, we got enough. We need some straight men around here. And it was clearly because I was being, you know, a wise ass. He was a liar and a storyteller in great comedic ways that no doubt influenced, you know. He convinced me when I was very young that he and his buddy invented peanut butter by going camping under a peanut tree, which I'm not sure is an actual kind of tree. I should know that. But they were, like, camping, and they had a fire, and it smelled good. And they were like, that's the peanuts. That's roasting peanuts. Put this on some bread that I guess they had camping. I don't know. There's comedy to storytelling and lies. Right?
Yeah. I love my... I love my answering machine. I love my answering machine. It keeps the people I know away from me. I don't watch TV. Don't watch my weight. I watch my answering machine. My best friend says,
it's me, pick it up.
I say, nope. My girlfriend says,
it's me, pick it up.
I say, nope.
Mr. Harris from the bank calling. Please pick up.
Yeah, right. I love my answering machine. I love my answering machine. I love my answering machine. It talks to my friends for me.
What is it about you that makes you want to tell professional funny lies? Because, like, that is a weird thing to want to do, isn't it? Like,
I guess it is, but, like, I don't know, there's... It was how I socialized in high school. Like, it was the bonding thing for me and my friends was to do this, to write stuff, to act in stuff, but mostly to write stuff. Like, we wrote all manner of things. We had grand plans, and it was what we did for fun. It was how we played.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point of, like, doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it,
mm-hmm.
there's no other option. Like, okay. I have no other marketable skills. I can reach stuff off a high shelf, but that doesn't pay.
Right.
The rest of it is like, I've painted myself into a corner where all I can really do is write, and I can really do it.
Yeah. Do you still get to listen to comedy albums at all? Is it a thing for you?
I don't seek out necessarily comedy albums because mm-hmm. Los Angeles is such a rich comedy town that I go and see comedy. Like, I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I'm lucky to get to be friends with the people that make me laugh the hardest. You know, like, I have, since moving here, been going to Paul F. Tompkins shows,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know how much you learn from that until you see another show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a comedy-rich town, so it's less about that album, although his albums are still fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just talked about Freak Wharf with Sarah Pocock the other day, it was a lot of fun.
I was there when he recorded the, what is the name of it? The first one.
Shit.
Yeah, we're both.
Now I'm...
Push pause and let's figure it out.
Yeah, okay.
I'll
totally push pause right now.
Click. In something incongruous, intolerable, in...
Oh, shit.
Infinite, in... I was there when he recorded that his first album at the UCB.
Mm-hmm.
And the peanut brittle bit...
Yes.
Killed me then. It kills me every... Like, it's... It's... I... Tears, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It's so... funny.
Yeah.
And again, point of view.
Sure. Know. It's a different craft than, well, it is a little bit of a different craft, of course, than writing narrative, though. And I mean, where do you find, is that what it is? Is it the character? Is that where you're finding, like, you're obviously not taking anything specifically, but the way he does something, how are you maybe a
Paul,
or anybody who you really love, I mean, especially stand-up, if you're watching stand-up, it's mm-hmm. such a different craft than...
But it feels like an amalgam of the rest of the stuff. Like, it is writing, it's the ultimate boiled down point of view, mm-hmm. Comedy, and that's what gets me, is like the, a guy who's right or a guy who's wrong, mm-hmm. you know, but like really believes it.
Yeah.
Is the funniest thing to me. I was watching in, Buffy the Vampire Slayer commentary track
uh-huh.
For the episode Hush.
Okay.
And That's where Buffy can't speak for the episode. They do a silent episode, and in the end, she encounters Riley, the army guy, who she's been they've both been keeping their double lives from, and they discover for the first time that they have a lot to talk about, and they can't say anything because they, whatever. And then there's a twist on it. Anyway, Joss Whedon says on this commentary track, the ridiculousness of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching it, and I realized that in like fewer than five words or whatever, he had summed up everything I like about comedy.
Yeah.
And so that could be applied to all of it. And that's, stand-up is pure perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and then there's the performance aspect, the good strong voice of the person, and how that applies to, you know, their perspective as well as the performance.
Sure.
Man, I don't know if this is digressive, but it's a couple of months ago I saw Ron Funches, who's a comedian who I don't know as a guy. And he made me laugh as much as anybody has ever made me laugh. Do you know that guy?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I don't know all of his work.
But I far from it. Like, I saw him do a set, and he became, like, that is a guy that is, that he's up there. Whoever puts him on a show is going to win. Cameron Esposito, you know her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's funny, too.
I mean, at what point, is there a spot in this podcast where it's just like, here's comedians that are awesome?
That's fine. Yeah, people do that all the time.
Good. I just want, what I want to do is fall in line, but also, like, with the specifics, I want to be unique. So,
no, you're succeeding.
Like, okay, good.
You're succeeding.
Like, if someone has said Cameron Esposito, I will
nobody's
take
mentioned
her off
her yet, actually. And she's great.
She's absolutely great.
Is it,
She feels next generation to me. Like, she's
for sure.
And that, I never watched a single episode of Star Trek. That's not a reference. She's taken to podcasting as a means of putting material out into the whole world in interesting ways.
I'm
interested to see what she's doing and how she does it.
Yeah, I've said several times, there's no way I could do stand-up. I don't get it. And it would feel so dangerous to me to let anything out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a recorded meeting, it's like, well, fuck, I can't do that anymore. I guess maybe you can, for people who don't listen, but everybody listens to the podcast now. I guess it's obviously it's different for you because you're serialized. You get to do something different.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every show.
Yeah, we're not, the stand-up, the structure, we're not jokes guys.
Right.
At all. Like, we're story guys, we're character guys, and the jokes we know will come. We did, our first episode we ever did was really joke light. Like, we were about, you know, the painting a picture in people's brains of, like, this is what's going on. There's the train that's going off the cliff, and it's a whole thing. We learned really fast that the audience, you'll never hear them nod.
Right.
You know, like, if we make them laugh, we'll know they enjoyed it.
Sure.
And that's better for going to sleep after a show,
right?
To know that they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So it became a comedy show in episode two.
That's interesting. I had no idea. Do you find listening to being a writer, and I mean, and knowing myself, listening to George Carlin, the thing that stood out to me originally was the fact that he played with words, used words in such an interesting way, had his own rhythm. That's another thing about Paul F. Tompkins to me is that his not only his voice and his perspective are clear, but he does have a very he words things beautifully.
Yes, his use of language is as specific as anybody's ever in history, and it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a perfect thing
when he does improv too.
Yes, absolutely.
And
like
I
it's
hate
all
that.
In there. No, it's awful. He and Hodgman both are like the most precise mother's fucker. It's. But also great performers. Like, that's, like, when he does a character, both of them, but when Paul finds characters to do and to be in the story that he's telling, and they're all over the place, like, in terms of how they enter in and who they are to the story.
Yeah.
And they're all just so fully realized, and it's in him. It's frustrating, like, how good he is at it.
Do you get to use that to write for him?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've been writing for him for a long time, writing for the Paul Tompkins show at Largo. That was my arc from guy who loved the comedy shows at Old Largo to regular customer to door guy to writing for Paul.
That's like, great.
He came and saw my first sketch show,
mm-hmm.
which had Work Juice player Mark Gagliardi in it,
mm-hmm.
At Second City, and asked me to write sketch for him. Paul did,
yeah.
Shortly after, and it was great. It was like, what a guy, mm-hmm. you know? Like, mm-hmm. who does that? Who bothers to go to the door guy at the venue's show?
Right.
Much less, you know, lift him up.
He's as much of a class act as he looks. God damn it.
Yeah.
I hate him more and more.
Yeah,
I've
yeah.
never met the man, but
I
hate him in a positive way.
Yeah, no, he's got cufflinks on his sweatpants. That's not a thing. yeah, he'd hate that, I say, as if he died.
Has there ever been a particular stand-up or a sketch group, maybe Kids in the Hall, who...
Yeah, again, let's bring it back
yes,
to the
let's
thing.
Bring it back to that. Like, as far... What specifically about their sketch comedy has it... I mean, was there anything as far as language? Did you
the
know,
language was great. The... I'm sorry, I'll let you finish.
No, you're fine.
But the stuff mattered. They were in it. They were performers. They were, like... They were great at character. I say that... Now I hope it's true, but in my memory,
yeah.
they were exploring character,
mm-hmm.
and I mean the conceits and the stuff was as funny as anything, you know. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I speak no English, was a great monologue and hilarious, and that was Dave, and then Scott was in the sketch just wanting to get shoes because it was raining out, but they were both fully. Realized characters that had a life beyond that sketch.
Go ahead.
I have a special friend, and he's baby Jesus, and I love him, and he don't give me no shit, and he don't fuck around, and he's just the fucking coolest guy, and I want to say I love the baby Jesus. I can't say it enough.
Yes, sorry.
Anyway, I love the baby Jesus. And I think he's the best thing, and that it's really great when he shares his love, because he's got enough love for everybody. You know what I mean?
That was a thing. Like, I felt at the time like you needed to choose between Kids in the Hall and The State, which you absolutely didn't.
Right, right.
There's no people to this day will say I like Sparks Nevada better than I like Beyond Belief. And in my brain, I'm like, what's wrong with Beyond Belief?
Yeah, right.
Or
right.
whatever. It's, you don't have to choose.
Right.
But at the time, it was very important that, like, it felt like a loyalty thing.
Yeah.
Kids in the Hall, because they are characters and they're committed in The State, they'll just drop the conceit and talk to the camera. Like, that is perfectly a viable form of comedy.
Right.
And really, those guys are as funny as anybody.
Sure.
But at the time, I was like, I am a loyalist to this.
Sure.
So it felt like the first time going, here's why. Here's what they do. They're mm-hmm. in the sketch. They have lives beyond the sketch.
Yeah. Did you actually?
When they played women,
mm-hmm.
it was because they needed female characters.
Yeah.
Like, you watch a thing where a guy is in drag and that's supposed to be the joke.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you?
Right.
How
right.
dare you?
Right.
That's not. The Kids in the Hall taught me. You also have to have a character there.
Yeah. And also that Dave Foley is remarkably attractive as a woman. That's really,
to this day.
It's upsetting to me.
To this day.
That's upsetting. Did you find yourself, did you watch SNL?
I did watch SNL.
Same time, or?
I feel like it was earlier. I feel like it was like the, once we saw the Kids in the Hall, it was like,
mm-hmm.
Saturday Night Live is fine. It's, you keep your hand and you watch it.
Right.
But like, this is the thing you talk about. Like,
mm-hmm.
this is who you want to be.
Definitely more ground was being broken, I feel like. Maybe I'm wrong. Again, maybe it's a weird perspective, but I feel like more ground was being broken on Kids in the Hall, because it's a limited group of people. It's not a rotating group of writers.
Mm-hmm.
Not the sweatshop that you always picture when you think of SNL.
Yeah. Well, and they had to please fewer, fewer people. They were on HBO. They were on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
They were. And so... Like, and they got to be weird. They got to do the strange. They got to... At the time that I came to Saturday Night Live, I feel mm-hmm. like it was real punch... not punch, catchphrase.
And yeah.
I feel like it was the Dana Carvey, the Isn't That Special,
yeah.
through to Making Copies. Like, that was
mm-hmm.
the era that it was on my radar.
Right.
And yeah, there was such specificity to the kids in the hall, both in you know, how they performed and how they shot the things. There was film stuff.
Yeah.
There was it was immersive.
Yeah.
In a way that like Saturday Night Live stopped needing to be live in what, 83?
Right.
Like where live television suggests immediacy as a strength. It was never in my lifetime.
Right.
Like arguably Jimmy Fallon breaking was something to enjoy and latch onto, and the fun of it was there, but like that was the first time I could remember that it was like compelling that it was live.
And
I was going to say, and it wasn't live because I was on the West Coast, but that's a lie and misremembering how everything went, because at that time I was on the East Coast and it for sure was live. So save all your cards and letters, which is a thing I learned I got from the Hudsucker Proxy, the expression cards and letters.
It's easy to steal from something that brilliant, though. I mean, that's good shit.
It really is.
Do you remember when you first started to break down comedy? Because you were talking about analyzing it pretty heavily a second ago. I mean, do you remember when it became... Was it, like, important to you just know the mechanics of it? Or did you ever do that consciously?
I wonder if I did. I mean, I know we were doing sketches for science homework. Like, we did a project about, I don't know, Mercury that we turned into a superhero story. And overpopulation was, like, real sketchy. Execution of the homework. I don't know. You know what? It must not have been conscious. I feel like it was... We did it regularly, and we created stories and things, but it wasn't until teaming up with my writing partner that I got the meat of that, like how to really deconstruct things effectively and usefully in my life.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like... and we talk about, like, in the early days, we both are adept at each other's roles now, but when we were finding that relationship, he was a structure guy and I was an ideas guy.
Okay.
And so I would come with, you know, a crazy concept, and he would go, now here's how you structure it so that it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then it's done.
Yeah.
And part of the initial us writing together was trying to figure out how sitcoms worked, because I had the opportunity to write a sitcom and have it get in front of people that would have made use of it.
Right.
And so he had me, like, watch a sitcom and write what happened in the scenes so that I could see the structure, the underlying structure of sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
It's, to this day, the best advice about how to start writing something.
Sure.
See something that you like and step back a step from it and deconstruct it. But I think it was... I feel like it's right to credit him with that aspect of true understanding of the matrix of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I was always full of shit about, like, what I did and didn't like about things.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of being able to apply it, I think that's to his credit. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, that makes perfect sense.
Can I undermine it somehow? No, like, I was the guy that, like, I had to learn that people didn't want to go see a movie with me because I would sigh.
Oh, no.
At all the shitty shit that was shit on the screen, insulting our collective intelligence. Like, I had to go, I have to shut up during movies. That's too bad, because I really didn't like that scene, and everybody should know it, and they shouldn't like it either. Like, I was a judgmental prick, like we all should have been, right?
Right,
or
right.
Or were.
Sure. It's definitely true.
But in a useful way.
Right.
Let's credit Blacker. I don't know. I probably would have found it.
Wouldn't you... have you seen Kids in the Hall live?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. I was... my first Los Angeles job, I was PA at Will and Grace.
Awesome.
And a conversation with... This is... I don't know if this reflects well on me or the people around me, but a conversation with Sean Hayes about what comedy we liked led to him bringing me to my high school best friend Dan, who we had watched Kids in the Hall together. He brought the two of us to see the Kids in the Hall at the Wiltern.
Holy crap!
And do a little backstage hi hello.
Oh, God.
It was as above and beyond as Paul coming and seeing the show, and which is why I say, like, maybe I'm just a great guy to have around. People want to, you know, exceed their social responsibility by bringing me to things that I would like to see,
right?
Or whatever,
right?
Yeah, saw them do that show live. It was great. Did you see it? Have you seen pieces of it?
I've seen them live once, and it was just a reading of the pilot.
The Have you seen the Jesus 2000?
No.
Sketch?
No. Oh wait, no. I've seen bits of it because it's in the documentary. It's in
the documentary.
So yeah, there are bits of it in their documentary. Oh man, which is great.
They were selling Jesus for the new millennium, and there was a bit where Kevin, I think, in a filmed bit, said, "Before I discovered Jesus 2000, I used to weigh 200 pounds.
That's right.
Do you know this bit?
Yeah.
And he says, I still weigh 200 pounds, but now I'm 10 feet tall. And they just changed the camera angle to make him look tall. And he did it all with Dave's voice. Like he was just mouthing Dave saying it. It was all of the things.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
They do manage when they're doing live stuff, they still manage to put stuff together that is so just as good, and I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah, I saw them at the Steve Allen as well.
Yeah, that's where I saw them once.
And it was grand. It was great. I've worked with Dave and Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thrill. Like I was in a sketch at Paul's show one time, where it was Gruber and Paul. Dave Gruber Allen, who's the nicest guy in Hollywood, even when he's not here. Dave Gruber Allen, Dave Foley, and Paul F. Tompkins. And I told Mark Gagliardi from the Thrilling Adventure Hour that I was going to just be like an extra in the sketch. They needed a body, and I was going to be in. And he said, "You know who would love that story?" And I said, "Who?" And he said, "You from any point in your life." And I had to go, like, yeah, the kids in the hall I loved in high school, and Mr. Show I loved in college, and Freaks and Geeks I loved in my early 20s, and here I was in my mid-20s, like, with a representative from each.
Yeah.
It was great.
That would blow my fucking mind. It's blowing my mind listening to
Look,
it.
Look, I have a lot of brags I can brag.
It's good. Those are good.
The face of work is a drunk man in the same chair, chewing on the same bone for 5,000 nights. The face of work is a coffee cup in hand, frustrated. "You don't get it. They all don't get it. Y'all don't understand, man." Daddy's on the drink again. Daddy's on the drink again. Daddy's doing another rant on shame and blame and guilt again. Had a sip at 6 and still hasn't swallowed it. Daddy's on the couch again. Slumped is in that slouch again. His fat drunk bum pushes the cushions out, my friend. "You know, my dad drinks rye." "Yeah? Whose dad doesn't?" "There's nothing on TV. There's nothing on TV." "Then what are you watching, Dad?" He falls asleep, wakes up, dark, dry mouth, and somehow he's in bed. Is there a fairy? Is there a drunk dad fairy? That tiptoes in, takes a TV changer out of his hand, puts a blanket around his shoulders, lifts his head off his chest, so his neck won't be sore tomorrow when the liquor leaves him for a time? Is there a drunk dad fairy that pays for that Chinese food?
When Bruce did our show for the first time, he came to what was then my new apartment for the rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And like that whole day, I'm like, I'm going to offer him a pen. He's going to be like, thank you, and he'll use it to mark a script. And then I'll be like, my pen. Like, that is going to be awesome. You know, the kind of plan that you have when you're that you don't intend to follow through.
Right.
But he came, and he nicest guy, polite for miles, took in my apartment that was no longer in boxes, but bare walled. And he said, "My, what a nice unadorned apartment you have." As earnestly as could be. And it was the warmest barb in my experience.
That's so good.
It was great. And Dave Foley, I have worked with him much more because he was in Paul's show. And we did a thing called Tiny Vaudeville that was McSweeney's, like an 826 fundraising event for a couple of months, mm-hmm. and I had written a sketch that was Who's on First tribute,
uh-huh.
where two guys love Who's on First. It's their favorite comedy bit of all time,
mm-hmm.
and so they're going to perform it for the audience, and they hadn't really planned it well, and they both want to play Costello. So it becomes about, like, the one that gets stuck playing Abbott
mm-hmm.
jumps a line so that he gets to say Costello's line, sticking the other guy in the Abbott part. And Dave Foley and Sam Levine performed it.
Oh, my God.
And they were rehearsing it beforehand, and Dave had this, like, we're gonna take it over here, and we're going to run it a few times because it's hard and I want to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't occur to me, because I'm not a performer like that fell away in college. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't occur to me that scenes could be hard and that I could write a hard one.
Right. Yeah.
For a guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
It blew my mind, and also, like, that it was important for him to nail it was, like, flattering, you know?
Sure.
And he did. They both That's just awesome. They both just nailed it. Is that a brag?
It's a
did
good
I just
brag.
Tell a brag?
It's a good brag. It's okay. I just mean
to say, I am lucky.
You regularly do a show with a lot of amazing people and write well for them, so it's okay to brag Thank about them.
That was, you know? If you watch mm-hmm. American Splendor, mm-hmm. not American Splendor, American Movie.
Yes.
As a creative person,
uh-huh.
it is the scariest thing in the world
right.
because you go, am I that guy?
Right.
Am I making Coven?
Mm-hmm.
For all I know,
right.
I am that guy yep. and I am making Coven.
Right.
But you soon realize, if you're a writer of the Thrilling Adventure Hour,
yeah.
Paul Tompkins is not going to return
right.
to do Coven twice.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's good to have that approval, like that mm-hmm. external validation that, like,
of course.
Yeah, the writing is good, right. but there's also the pressure of, like, every single person in this cast is that good.
Right.
And I have, like, Blacker and I have talked about, like, we have to deserve them. We have to earn right. that every month. Like, we cannot phone it in because mm-hmm. they're not going to. But you talk about the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing,
right.
of, like, us. We did not have anywhere near our 10,000 hours to start when we started the show. And, you know, hopefully we're close now after 8 years. But
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you who did have their 10,000 hours, our cast. And if you yeah. if yeah. you don't have it, but you can get people who do to say the words, it is going to seem like you're a lot closer than you are.
Sure,
yeah.
sure. I feel like that question, which I totally relate to, asking yourself that, is the same. They always say a crazy person doesn't ask themselves whether or not they're crazy. You know what I mean? There
yeah.
is that. Although, to be fair, I meet a lot of people who don't ask themselves that. Yeah, they don't ask themselves a question that you just.
So you're saying I'm a great person? Like,
yeah, that's exactly what that was what I wanted to.
How introspective was Brian Stack?
He was pretty introspective.
Ooh, so you beat me again.
He's a nice guy.
I know he's really great.
So nice,
he's
right?
Really great.
Ridiculously nice.
It's hard to.
Yeah, it's really hard when you grew up watching a guy and they come over to your place and you're like. Sweetest guy. Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. That's what
you
know, I do
adorn
that every
your walls.
Week. I do that every week, and then people come
listener,
over to my place.
The walls are adorned with comedy albums.
There are
and
comedy
such.
Albums.
There's a Muppet.
There is a Muppet.
A puppet or a Muppet?
It's a Whatnot, which is a licensed puppet from the Muppet people. So it's like an official. The head underneath is definitely designed by the good people at Jim Henson. The nose, you get to pick the nose and the glass. It's all, you know, it's licensed.
I don't know.
I love it. It makes me very happy. I literally cried when my girlfriend gave it to me for Christmas. It was good. It's good stuff. He makes me very happy.
He, your girlfriend?
No. He the puppet.
All right.
My girlfriend also makes me very happy.
But pronouns are different.
They are different.
Yeah.
It, the puppet, makes me happy.
No, I'm fine with you gendering okay. your puppet male.
Okay.
I mean,
fine.
He has no...
The confusion
he's
was...
He's got nothing below the... The torso, right. the waist.
He was designed somewhat to look like me, but I don't think we're here to talk about my mom. Are we?
It's your podcast.
It is
bro.
My podcast. That is true. Did you? So, what was it like the first time you realized you had to write for one of these guys, one of the kids in the hall? I mean,
Fortunately, I believe that. Well, okay. The first time that we wrote for Dave.
Mm-hmm.
he couldn't do the episode.
Oh.
So somebody else played the part, but the part was stronger for having written it with Dave in mind.
Right, right.
That much more specific and in a voice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I feel like... I mean, definitely the time that we had Bruce and Dave as a pair of vampires. I'm fairly certain we wrote it first and then thought of the guys, as opposed to having them in mind for those parts.
Right.
So the pressure has been off. Yeah.
Can you, let's see. Did you ever, or did your parents introduce you to any comedy?
Yeah, my, when I listened to some of your episodes to decide to come and be on the show or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking like, oh, Tom Lehrer maybe, mm-hmm. because my father had Tom Lehrer and Alan Sherman records in
okay.
my house.
Yeah.
And I listened, like, they quickly became mine, and so I have, like, I have a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Comedy songs. Parodies, I guess, Alan Sherman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have that background. And, oh, I remember, oh, man, I remember the first time I had to, like, I was laughing so hard I had to leave the room to pee, was watching Bill Cosby himself with my parents.
God. Yeah.
So they must have had it on, and, like, when he held up his bottom lip... I don't know if I was six, but, like, that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life to that point. Man, he talked crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Putting B's and stuff. The letter B. He wasn't... You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. I gotcha. Have you,
And Tom Lehrer, did you touch on...
We've talked about Tom Lehrer.
Yeah, sure. I listened to the episode, but mm-hmm. that he was doing stuff for the electric company.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Somebody did bring
Silent
it up. And
E
I didn't know that until...
And L.Y., mm-hmm. those songs. It's good.
That's a special skill, to be able to write something educational and keep it interesting and fresh and not feel like everything... I mean, you know, I guess yeah. that's what Yo Gabba Gabba does. You know, it's got its own... That's the new version, but it's hard. You know, what's interesting is I wanted to get Tom Lehrer on the podcast, and apparently his number's just in the book. You can just call Tom Lehrer up.
Who was telling...
I'm tempted to do that.
What podcast was I listening to?
They might have talked about it on The Nerdist. I know
it wasn't Tom Lehrer. It was like just mm-hmm. a guy that was hanging out and going, oh, these people all live in Los Angeles, and then called his heroes and talked to, like, I feel like it was a Marin podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking to someone about how they called. Yeah, and you should edit this up.
It's okay. I don't do a lot of editing, but I do when I'm just not saying enough,
uh-huh.
which sometimes happens late in the day. It's warm. It's very warm. I should make that.
I'm trying to remember who the hell that was. It was really fun. They like
on the podcast they call.
Podcast they talked about like when
having
they moved
just
to
called.
LA.
Okay.
They were like, oh, this person lives here,
mm-hmm.
and like called Chico Marx or whoever it was,
holy
and
shit.
Like. I want to say it was Dick Van Dyke, but I don't think it was.
Right. Holy shit. Either way.
Yeah.
That's ballsy. I mean, now I got Facebook. I can contact whoever I want, but they don't have to respond.
He said. She said. She said, I love you, baby. I love everything about you. I even love your handwriting. Do you know what I mean? He said.
Yeah.
She said, I love you, baby. Just sometimes I'm not sure. Sometimes I wish there was more. He said,
sure.
She said, when we met, I felt so good about us. It was like we were on fire. Everything about you, the lobe of your ear, was a mystery to be solved. Do you feel it too? He said,
yeah.
She said, don't get me wrong. I love you. We're in love. I even love our love. It's lovely, but sometimes I feel it stop. Do you know what I mean? He said,
sure.
Do you remember the first sketch you ever wrote?
First sketch? For, like... Yeah. I wrote dumb stuff in high school.
Mm-hmm. That's what we all did.
Like, we wrote... boy, oh boy, that was terrible. We wrote, like, plays and stuff
mm-hmm.
that had no business being played. You're like... You know when you don't have a point of view?
Sure.
It's just like, hey, there's stuff, and like I like people, and what would they... like, I like Kids in the Hall. What would a Kids in the Hall thing be when you have no distance from it?
Right.
And no cognitive processing or whatever. Like, we wrote a play that we took to... I grew up outside D.C., and there was the Virginia Theater Association.
Mm-hmm.
Had, like, real pretentious plays.
Uh-huh.
And it would be the kind of thing where the schools around would cast it like they were doing a school play and, mm-hmm. like, bring it down, bring a short, like maybe a one act or whatever. And our drama teacher thought that was a colossal waste of time because, like, the conventional play has a lead.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that everybody's putting in the same amount of work so that one person can go down and look good in this thing. Right. So she wasn't going to do it. And my buddy Dan and I got tasked with writing what was a framing device for sketches, really.
Uh-huh.
And I think he ripped it off from Monty Python. And so we had a thing that was so that each person or pair could do a comedy bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we took it to Norfolk where this competition was. And, man, we just had fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we subsequently met people from other schools that had to do the hard and dumb things.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that we were kind of like... They kind of sneered at us because they were jealous.
Right.
Like, you guys got to dick around and put a song in it.
Right.
And it was no fair, because we worked for months on this awful piece of dog shit. And from there, I think it was either slightly before that or just after that that we got, like, we wrote an anti-drug play that lacked conviction.
Uh-huh.
And, like, school assembly shit, like, that you'd see on Freaks and Geeks and go, oh, they should have been embarrassed that they were asked to do that stuff, much less the joy they took in doing that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anything that stood out? And it was this way for me with Monty Python, and less so for Kids in the Hall, the aspect of the fact that they're a bit foreign. Did that attract you to the comedy at all, or was it strictly characters? Because to me, some of the language stands out and makes it a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think it must have manifested itself in language choices as opposed to, like, a feeling of distinct Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was some Canada references there.
Sure.
Hockey teams and things.
Mm-hmm.
The Toronto Kid that must have made its way in, but... Like, I feel like I read... My grandmother kept my father and uncle's old comic books.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like reading those gave me a way into another time.
Yeah.
And that is evocative for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that... What was the sensibility there? That is, sure. I feel like what's behind the question about is Canada exotic?
Right, right, right.
But, yeah, that is that thing that I can be aware that I'm playing with those elements with our show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's an element of timelessness and timeliness that we go back and forth between. But did you see the Watchmen movie?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were the first superhero thing that I noticed that did that, that made you feel like these characters are of a time and
right,
place. That
right.
If for nothing else, I like that about the movie.
Mm-hmm. Does it help you? Do you like things that help... Damn it, plane, whatever. I don't think you'll be able to hear it. The things that suck you in to... I guess there's a fantastical element to that, obviously, and to what you write that's, you know, far removed... Most comedy is far removed from reality, but... And what you're writing, again, is... I don't want to use the word pastiche. That's not fair. That's
a little fair.
I guess. But but you're not using all the same tropes. You're not trying to do a copy of any old show.
Right, we're combining two old shows
at a time. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. That's good.
It is Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon.
Right.
No, wait. Lone Ranger and
Right, Lone Ranger. Flash Gordon. Right, right, right. Which, thank goodness nobody's done before, because that's amazing.
Well, Toy Story... Kind of. They had a separate character. Separate
exactly
characters.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like, you got a space cowboy.
Yeah, nobody had done that.
Right.
Joss Whedon fans, shut up.
Right. It's different.
It's slightly different.
Slightly different.
They like the same things we like.
Right.
And they're writing their thing, and we're writing it.
I guess the question was really just about escapism. And has that ever particularly sucked you in as far as comedy? Or is it, again, more just stories or characters? Because, you know, there's some comedy that is 100% pure escapism. And then...
Like what?
It's a really good question now that you say that. Now I'm just sort of struggling because I thought I had something in my head that would work. But the films, I suppose, more is what I'm thinking of, is films are much more escapist than, I would say, sketches.
Well, I think that self-aware. The distinction of sketch versus what we do, I think, is one that we are, you know, we're aware of and we are attempting to tell a story as opposed to part of a story, you know? When you write sketch, it's what's the quickest version of this that heightens and then gets out, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And ours is, you know, we get to tell a long story.
Sure.
Like we're telling, like, each of our pieces tends to be three sketches, kind of, or a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right.
And as much as we're able to, and that's not what a sketch is supposed to do or designed to do.
Right.
And we're lucky to have found the audience that wants that kind of, wants to pay the kind of attention that you have to pay to follow the story, and they do. How invested they are in the characters is amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is, I don't know. I could express my excitement for how excited people are about the thing that I make for a while. I'll just write it down and bury it in my yard.
I feel like it's doing what you do gets a kind of connection that doing sketch might not, where people are not as invested. People are laughing at the characters a little more in most sketch.
Yeah, and in the sketch, the design ideally is to make you laugh.
Yeah.
And our design is, that's important, but it's not what we're hinging the stuff on.
Right.
We're telling a story.
For the sake of our listeners, in case we haven't talked about it enough, if somebody's going to ask, if somebody didn't know about this album, like I didn't know much about Kids in the Hall, what would you tell them to get them to listen to it?
To listen to this album?
Yeah, why is it important?
We've talked about it pretty exhaustively.
We have.
What kind of person am I telling?
Somebody who doesn't know enough about comedy, and they're trying to learn about comedy.
Oh, what are they like? What's their comedy?
That's a good question. I don't know. They're trying to discover it. Let's say, for instance, it's a young 16-year-old kid who's watching a lot of shit on Nickelodeon or the Disney Channel.
Oh, wow.
And doesn't know any better and just saw a spark of something.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you watch a little bit of, Adventure Time?
Oh, yeah.
This person, I'm saying?
Oh, does this person? Yeah. Yeah, let's say this person likes Adventure. That's the first thing that got them interested in comedy.
I feel like the sensibility that Adventure Time is built like Pee-wee's Playhouse, which you should also look into, and a couple other things where it is encouraging the weird kid to just be weird and not be bummed about it, but to embrace it, and that's part of what this is... It's comedy for that weird kid that's gonna like comedy,
right?
And
it we didn't really talk about the darkness, but just so everybody knows, it's a very dark album.
There is darkness, but it's delivered so subtly.
Yeah, yeah,
and that, you know, that's the levels that make something rich.
Did all my acid in grade 8. That was the old days when acid had names, flavors, as it were. Window pane, orange, sunshine. But then things shifted. Acid stopped having names, and chips became flavored. That's progress. I can remember a time when you'd get orange sunshine, window pane, or purple microdot, but the only chips you could get were plain, or in some stores, Ripple. Cut to the chase. I did all my acid in grade 8. I got
gobbled it right quick. I couldn't get enough of it. I did all my Southern comforts in grade 9. One bottle. Ooh, what a night.
There's a band called The Beautiful South, mm-hmm. formerly The House Martins.
Okay.
And they have a... They had a series of songs that were just as sunny a song as can be, but about dark stuff. If what is the, there's one that's the perfect love song doesn't have words, it only has death threats. You can tell how much she loves you by how threatening it gets. So if you walk into your house and she's cutting up your mother, she's only trying to tell you that she loves you like no other.
Oh my God.
And it's that, like that. That's fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They do like a real sad version of the Bobby Darin song Artificial Flowers,
uh-huh.
which is like Bobby Darin's is the swinginest version sure. of the story of a girl who freezes to death because
mm-hmm.
she's too poor.
Right.
And that's probably like that's the way I prefer. I prefer my awful darkness mm-hmm. delivered sunny.
Sure.
Because there's, you know, there's hope in that.
Right. Right. Hey, it's what comedy is generally about. One yeah. hopes. Some people can mix them better, I guess, but...
Yeah. Yeah, and Bruce is really dark, but really... I don't know. He was the cute one, I think.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So there's always that in it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he writes a good, catchy jingle.
Like for
he
sure.
writes a good song.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
Al Miller, that is a weird tune.
Yeah.
Like, I like some of the songs are just like, here's a guy, here's some guys I know, here's this dude, and mm-hmm. he is noteworthy to me.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to, yeah, because he doesn't want me to write a song about him, I'm going to write a song about
right,
him.
Right, right.
Like, there's an amount of, I guess, the spite
mm-hmm.
to being young.
Yeah.
It captures that.
Definitely.
Like, where you don't know what the world is yet,
mm-hmm.
but screw it. Because it's not what you hoped it would be,
right.
but you don't really know that, but, like, you're going to have to pay rent.
Right, right.
Or whatever, like, it's that. It's that transitional, like, everything is cool, wait, everything's not cool, whose fault is this? Because it's not mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That, I think, is, like, a real ingredient of the Kids in the Hall and Bruce specifically.
That's awesome. That's good. What should you plug? You're on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, BNACKER. There's another Ben Acker that has the E between the B and the N. No, he's great. He's a good guy. He's gotten me stuff that's been
he's too, no Brian too my attention.
Look, Brian Stack is a goddamn saint. I wish you would stop attacking him. Right? He does good work.
He does too.
For but like his charity stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you touched on it when he was here. He's too shy to talk about it, but he probably does a lot of good charity work. And if he does, he's probably too shy to talk about it.
Right.
Right? Like, good Christian, Brian Stack.
Right, right, right.
Real good. Also, great Jew. Is that... Are those googly eyes?
No.
No.
No, they're not. Also, the Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Yeah, let's plug the Thrilling Adventure
Hour.
Which
we can...
you guys, do you have iTunes?
See it live.
Oh, yeah. No, you should see it live.
Are you talking about this kid? Who watches Adventure Time? He yeah, also has iTunes.
What's his name?
Craigles.
Oh, Craigles.
That's his nickname.
There was a... I used to live near Genghis Cohen, a Chinese food place that has a performance space in it where musicians will play.
Yeah.
And there is the best band name I ever saw. Mm-hmm. They were hyping Craig Stofferson. But it's brilliant.
It's pretty great.
Anyway, yeah, so I'd like to plug Craig Stofferson, wherever he or they is or are. Yes, listen to... I assume that if you bothered tuning into this, you already listened to The Thrilling Adventure.
I would hope so.
And if you don't follow us on Twitter, follow us on Twitter, ThrillingADV, because you'll find out about stuff like The Thrilling Adventure, our graphic novel that is coming out thanks to a Kickstarter campaign that succeeded like a mofo
mm-hmm.
last year. It's... if you're at Comic-Con, you can get it from us in July. But if you're not, you can wait till August to get it with the rest of the world.
Awesome.
And it's really great. It's really satisfying in terms of translating what we do into a new medium.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of the artists, it's an anthology, it's 10 stories, 10 pieces of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 artists, an artist for each of the things.
So cool.
And they're so good. Mm-hmm. They made us look like we know. It's the same thing. Like, you get the actors who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So even if it's your first time out, like, oh, you look like you're born to do that thing. It's the same. Like, they covered us. They nailed it. And I can't wait to buy them a drink at Comic-Con. There's that. We did a Wolverine season one. When does this air? Before June?
I can try. I can certainly try.
You know, buy Wolverine if you want. But, no. It was fun. We got to play with Wolverine. I don't know if you're a comic nerd. Comedy nerd, you're listening to this. Maybe you're a comic nerd. I don't know what that Venerium looks like, but Wolverine. We got to mess around with Wolverine, and then we wrote Thrilling Adventure, our graphic novel, and we intend to do more comic books.
That's awesome.
It is great. And what else do we do?
You do a live show version of the podcast.
Look, if you can get tickets to this thing, go to it. We sell out.
I know.
In a way that feels like bragging. Like, I don't. I almost don't hype it because, like, oh, can I get a ticket to it? No, I think we're sold out.
Yeah, my friend offered me tickets to something for my birthday, and I'm like, great, let's do it. 3-4 months later, I could get tickets.
Yeah, it's a real. It's high class problems, but mm-hmm. yeah, I feel. I don't hype it as much as I could because, like, I don't want to go, oh, go get tickets. Oh, you couldn't? Because I can't do anything about it.
Right.
But we added a second show for June.
Oh.
Right. So there's plenty of tickets to June left.
Mm-hmm.
We got some really cool guest stars for May, so sneak into that one.
Mm-hmm.
This will air after that. And we're taking July off. Hopefully we'll do something at Comic-Con that's worth telling you guys about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're back in August, and I feel like we added a second show to June because we sold it out well in advance. If you guys buy August tickets and sell us out, we'll add a second August show.
That'd be awesome.
I think. Don't hold me to it, but tweet about it.
Not that it needs my endorsement, but when I got to see it, I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you.
I was just pissed that I didn't get to see James Urbaniak. I was really upset.
Oh, he's great.
It's nobody's fault.
It's nobody's fault.
Nobody's fault. I feel like I'm owed something, but it's nobody's fault.
I'll get you James for this show.
He's been on the show 2 or 3 times already.
Yeah, I'll get him for an even fifth.
Okay, that's fine. All right. See, you're going to guarantee the fifth. That's okay.
Yeah, you're on your own for the fourth.
That's
third
fine.
And fourth.
That's fine. That's fine.
What would you like to have seen him do?
I don't know. I don't know. That's
have you heard
question.
His Tesla?
No.
He does in our show a Bowie as Tesla.
Oh, my God.
Because you know he does Bowie on the video.
Yeah, so that I know. Yeah, that I know. I did not know he did. Oh, good God. That's great. Yeah, no,
there's
and I can't
two Colonel TikToks where he's played Bowie Tesla.
That's so good.
And here's the thing about James. Here's some backstage insider. In order to get the Bowie voice, James Urbaniak says the opening of... what is the song? He goes, I know when to stay out. I know when to go in. Whatever that is. it's a song about marriage, right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds. I know it, but yeah. I don't know the song.
But that, like, it's a little spoken thing that Bowie says. Oh. I know when to go out. And that's what James has to do to find his Bowie.
Awesome.
I know when to stay in again. I don't know what it is.
That's good shit.
It's almost a good story.
It's a good story.
But it's true. It's a true story.
That's what's important. That's what matters. Is there anything else you want to...
Plug. Oh, we're mm-hmm. on plugs.
You can keep going.
Man, I don't know if this is appropriate, but I just started listening to a podcast called Welcome to Night Vale.
Uh-huh.
And it's blowing my mind.
All right.
It's
people really listen good. Listen to the Welcome to Night Vale. That's what it's called, Welcome to Night Vale.
Welcome to Night Vale. It's right. community radio mm-hmm. From a small desert town that happens to be full of Lovecraftian horror around
That's
every
awesome.
Corner. It's like the Boy Scout meeting will be moved from the church rumpus room to the... to the multipurpose room in the community center because the church is being painted. Also, there's a cloud hovering over the middle of town. Don't look at it and don't think about it. It's dangerous. Like, it's great.
That's cool.
It's neat. I don't know. Cut that. They don't need my business. No, don't cut it. You know what? Go ahead and listen to it. I dare you.
Is that it? Is there anything else? I want to make sure that we cover everything.
We're going to New York?
You're going to New York? Oh, that's right.
Tickets are sold out.
Oh, son of a bitch. Never mind. You guys won't be in New York.
No, we'll be in New York.
Don't tell.
We're sold out now.
Okay.
We gotta go now.
That's true.
It's probably this one here by then. Right?
I don't know. A couple weeks? I can put it out whenever you want me to put it out.
Look, it's your house.
It is my... That's true. That is true. But I did an interview the other day where I was like, it has to be out in such a certain... I'm like, whoa.
Right, no, you can do this.
That was a PR person.
Puerto Rican?
Right. There's no appropriate response to that.
That's fair.
I could try.
A home audience, I got really excited at the notion that it was a Puerto Rican person.
So it's fine. She did not.
I'm
she
pro
was
people.
Very white.
Cut that out.
I'm just, she's a white, nice lady.
Do you see that Kids in the Hall sketch?
Which one?
Barry White. Barry White.
Wait a minute.
They were on like an island, like a some sort of tropical island.
Uh-huh.
And Scott played a native, I believe.
Okay.
And was talking about the bit was that he looked very white.
Okay.
He pronounced it Barry White, and then he made a joke about Barry White.
Jesus Christ.
It's can you connect? I don't know how podcasts work. Can you make a YouTube clip go in this podcast?
I can put one in the blog.
Yeah, but I'd prefer it if like
the
I said that thing and
then
were
it
able
played.
To click.
Okay.
They were able to click something.
Oh, I see.
On there.
I'm going to say probably not.
You know, someday the science will catch up to
it
us.
Will.
Our
it
dreams
will.
And ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
Someday. Sunday. Oh, the Nerdist Writers Panel. That's what my writing partner, that's what we call him,
mm-hmm.
Ben Blacker, he does it. It's really great.
Yeah.
Check it out. I don't know if you can help us get staffed on a TV show.
Sure.
Do that. I recommend you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Staffing season's happening.
Okay.
So that's a plug for me and Blacker to have insurance and
mm-hmm.
gainful employment.
Right.
So if you're a listener and you and you're a showrunner on one of the new crop of TV shows, hire us.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to plug Justified. It's
mm-hmm.
a great show.
All right. Two broke girls.
Yeah, I think they're doing all right. They don't need my help. They don't need the old Comedy on Vinyl bump. One of them does. Yeah, Kat Dennings. Is that the name of one?
That is the name of one of them.
Boom.
Yep.
Give her a bump. egg creams. Those are good. Try one of those.
Those are good.
Well,
we got old timey at least once. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. Oh, the expression 23 skidoo. Look it up, and then once you've mastered the nuance of it, use it all you can.
I will say that James Urbaniak, to bring it back, wrote a very brilliant joke with the word skidoo in it for my book, where I interviewed him, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever read in my life. I'll just say that.
All right. I will say that I wrote a bit with James, for James, to do with Bob Newhart. I will tell you off the air.
All right.
Because at a certain point, me just telling what bits I wrote is not good podcasting.
Well, everybody, thank you very much for listening. And thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
It was a lot of fun. And as usual, everybody, have a good thing.
Caller, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here with my girlfriend.
Hi.
Do you want us to turn our radios down? We already did.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, will you play our song for us?
Well, what is your song?
In a Garden of Vida.
Where we belong. What?
What is your love song?
It's
These are the days I know. These are the days I know.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, rate us highly, and write your reviews. You can follow us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl and Twitter @ComedyOnVinyl.
I've known since I was 6. In grade 8, he broke his leg, so we got drunk and sick. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. Some of them are Davids,
but most of us are Daves.
They all have their own hands, but they come from different moms. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. Dave Jadisky, man, this cat can swing. He weighs almost 50 pounds and he delivers my paper on time. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. Dave Capisano, I hardly know him. These are the days I know, these are the days I know. These are the days I know, these are the days I know.
We are the Daves he knows, we are the Daves he knows. We are the Daves he knows, we are the Daves he knows. Some of us are Daves,
but most of us are Daves.
We all have our own hands, but we come from different moms.
These are the Daves I know.
We are the Daves he knows.
These are the Daves.